This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And when it comes to vacation plans, nobody does it better than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. They have been everywhere. They have done everything. They can help you find the shortcuts. They can help you find the great deals. Give them a shot. Give them a try. Go visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Smith from Lake Placid, Florida, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 150 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean, who is anxiously awaiting March. Right? Because you don't want it to come in as a line.
I'm anxiously awaiting April for when I get to run the Boston Marathon. And I was in Fenway Park the other day and in the bleachers, and it was covered with snow. So I know pitchers and catchers have already reported. So I can see opening day coming. I can see spring coming. Hope it's going to happen soon. So I have a whole bunch of just quick shout-outs to some people who joined the Mickey Milers team. And they are Leslie Rask, Stephanie Grace, Matthew Milhauser, and Diane Parker, and Kimberly Amato. And there are about 145 other friends who have joined, too. So we can't wait to see you guys at some upcoming races. Thanks for joining the team.
It'll be good to see and associate faces with names.
Yes.
We are pleased to have returning once again our favorite our favorite trainer, our favorite Olympian, our favorite one of our favorite people. Jeff Galloway has agreed to come on and to talk about a very important inaugural race and to also answer some of the questions that have been posed to us and to him by our listeners. So, Jeff, thanks again for coming on.
Well, Mike and Michelle, first of all, congratulations on 150 podcasts. That is a monumental task that you've done great.
Thank you. Thank you. We couldn't do it without people like you, Jeff.
Well, also, congratulations on the Mickey Mouse team, because you're doing just such a great job in raising funds for worthy cause and getting people involved. What a neat thing.
It's very gratifying to see people. And as you well know, Jeff, in all the training and associations you have been with, it's very gratifying to see people help others and to help themselves, too. So it's a great feeling. It's really great. One of the things we wanted to talk about today is there is a very important inaugural race that will occur later on this year. It's the inaugural Jeff Galloway 13.1. In Atlanta, Georgia. It will be taking place, I believe, on December 14th this year. And Jeff, Michelle and I would love for you to talk about the race, how it all came about, and anything else that you can share.
Well, Mike and Michelle, we are excited. We at Galloway Productions, I have been putting on events for close to 40 years. I started out with very small events and learned craft that way. I was co-director of the Peachtree Road Race for 3 years and really went to school on big races during that period, because we grew from 1,200 to 12,000 in 3 years, made mistakes and learned from those. I have conducted a corporate event in Atlanta that now has over 17,000 people in it, and that's been enough for me over the last 10 years, but over the last 15 to 20 years, I have been consistently asked by people literally all over the world, why don't you hold your own distance event, your own half marathon or marathon? And a lot of them have actually requested that it be done in Atlanta, my hometown, to show some of my favorite places to run and that sort of thing. Well, I finally made the decision a couple of years ago that I really wanted to do this, that I really felt that there were a number of really beneficial things that could come about. First of all, we will have run, walk, run pace groups so that everyone can not only use run, walk, run, but they're going to have guidance at whatever pace they want to run almost. Obviously, we're not going to do every 5 minutes, but we will have a lot of pace groups and we will get a lot of people involved who have never tried it before. Secondly, we'll have a whole weekend of activities. This is going to have an expo in which we will have a lot of the products that we feel are beneficial for runners. Sometimes they may not have gotten as much exposure. Anyway, we're looking forward to a number of innovative exhibits at the expo. We will have an event on Saturday before the Sunday half marathon. It's the Jeff Galloway half marathon on Sunday, but on Saturday morning, we're going to have the Barb Galloway 3.1. And I'm very excited about that.
Cool.
Barbara doesn't really get a chance to invite people to a lot of places. I'm usually the one. And so she's inviting folks to come to Atlanta and run her 5K. It will start just up the road from my Fidipides running store, the first specialty running store in the country. And it's a very nice scenic, mostly downhill course, so that's a good thing. And then it will finish at my Fidipides store, and there'll be some music and refreshments and just a lot of fun things there. Over the last few months, as we have been preparing to announce this, we've put together a number of components. One of the things that we definitely are going to have is a fabulous medal, and we're working on the design for that right now. We will also have a number of activities that are fun. We've got my friend Bill Rogers, who I ran with in college and have stayed good friends with ever since. Bill will be joining us. Also, Bart Yazzo from Runner's World, my good friend, will be coming in too. And we'll have some other guests too, but it's just going to be a wonderful, here's Atlanta. We're going to have some special events that we will not announce yet. We're going to do this periodically, but it's just a great opportunity to have fun in a great running city, and I'm so pleased to announce it.
Oh, boy. I want to go to Atlanta now. Oh, boy. That sounds fantastic.
Jeff, can you talk a little bit about what you're calling the Fitness Festival, which is going to be held on that Friday and Saturday before the half marathon?
Absolutely. It is in an expo situation. It will be located right off the MARTA line, so it will be easy to get to. And it will have a number of different fitness booths, activities, businesses, tips, advice, a really good chance to not only find products in the fitness industry, but get some solid advice as to what works and what really you want to steer away from based on your own individual problems.
Sounds great.
That's awesome. If anyone out there would like to learn more about Jeff Galloway 13.1, you can go to www.jeffgalloway131.com. You can find out a little bit more about this inaugural half marathon. You can register on that site, and we will have that information in our show notes. Michelle.
Oh, I just wanted to say, too, that I'm so happy that Barbara gets a race, too, because I've seen her at numerous Disney events. She's such a lovely person, and people sometimes walk right by her to get to you, and she's always taking pictures, and you know, I know she's your running buddy, so I just think it's fantastic. She's such a nice person. So if you're at a Run Disney Expo, say hello to Barbara too.
Well, you know, we've been married for real close now to 38 years. It'll occur in just about 6 weeks, and it's just the most wonderful thing for us to share running with other people, and we're going to do that together and just have a wonderful weekend of good experiences.
That's great. Okay, so are you ready for some questions? Jeff, every time we post that you're going to be on the show, the questions start pouring in.
I'm ready.
Okay. So this is an interesting one. Our buddy James Knowles wants to know something a little bit about your history, how you went from the military to the Olympics, and what it was like in Munich in 1972 with all that went down. That could be a whole podcast in and of itself.
Well, yes. And the bottom line on Munich is I really promote the Prefontaine movie that was made about Steve Prefontaine, my friend. And it actually portrays most of that era and that time period very well. There's one thing that it did that wasn't exactly according to what happened, and that is it shows the pre-character looking out and seeing the terrorists take over the Israelis. And actually, we could not see that from where our rooms were. And but that was done in order to speed up the plot of the movie. The bottom line is that Munich was really a turning point in the way that we looked at Olympic sports and politics, and they've been intertwined, but they got really intertwined as a result of that Olympics. Those of us who were part of that Olympics had to go one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time. There were a lot of wonderful experiences. The two that really stand out are, first of all, I got into pen trading, and I really enjoyed the opportunity to interact with people from other countries. So I would take my pens down to the pen trading area in Olympic Village and really got into it and got bits and pieces of people's stories in the process. And I really enjoyed that a lot. In the process, I traded with an Israeli athlete before the incident occurred, and I still have that pen. And as I look at that pen every day, I wonder if he was one of the fallen 11 Israeli athletes.
Oh, wow.
And it's just an eerie experience for me, but at least I have that pen and that connection with somebody that really was part of this whole experience there. The other, actually, sort of a funny experience relates to my friend Steve Prefontaine. Steve and I were going to go into the downtown Munich one day, and so we started walking towards the train to get into the city, and we went through the pen trading area, and I saw a couple of guys that I had traded with, and so I went over there, and Pre usually didn't like stuff like that, and so he started saying stuff, "Oh, this is a bunch of junk, and why don't these people concentrate on their races and all this sort of stuff?" And so I said, "Well, Pre, I want to trade a few pens, so if you want to go on in to Munich, you go ahead." So I started doing some trading, and he watched me, and then he started looking at pens, and he got so involved with it that he ended up staying there for another hour after I left.
Oh, that's so funny.
And Pre was just, whatever he got into, if he liked it, he tried to do it better than anybody else. That was just the way he was. That Prefontaine movie, the movie that's labeled Prefontaine, actually has a Jeff Galloway character in it. But it's very well done. It really does have a lot of the feeling for who Pre was, as well as the facts of his life.
Oh, thank you. What a treat. What a great answer. Thank you so much. Okay, so the other questions relate to specific training questions. So I think we've set the mark for the rest of them. But the next question is from a buddy of ours, and I know she's a buddy of yours and a hero to many people, who is Kimberly Torres Markey. And she wants to know, if we don't want to go outside because it's too cold, how do we do interval training on the treadmill? How would you suggest doing it on the treadmill?
Oh, Kim is super. What an inspiring person. I have never seen Kim down. She is always up. She's always positive. She and I are working together e-coaching-wise to get her qualified for Boston.
Oh, wow.
And she has been going through chemo recently, but that has not gotten her down. And I am absolutely positive. I have no doubts that she's going to qualify for Boston.
Oh, yeah. She did her last chemo just before the dopey, the Friday before the dopey. So, yeah.
She did the dopey, yes. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
And then she went out and did the Tinkerbell.
Exactly, the next week.
And she'll be at the Princess, too. So.
Well, to answer her question, Kim, the main concept on the treadmill is that you, first of all, you want to put the elevation up about 2 to 3 degrees. So what that does is mechanically, it sort of sets you up to run similar way that you would on the road. Secondly, set up the pace of the treadmill for your speed repetition to be a tiny bit faster than would normally be the goal for that workout. And the reason is that the treadmill is not calibrated, and in most of the cases when I've seen the calibrations, it shows that the treadmill is actually going a little bit slower than the pace that it says it is. Now, I don't know whether they sell more treadmills that way or not, but the fact is that it would be to your advantage to speed it up at least 5 seconds on a half mile, if you're doing half mile reps, and if you're doing full 1 mile repetitions, then I would recommend 10 seconds faster than your pace would be outside.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm glad she asked that question. That was valuable to me, too. Okay, thank you. The next question is from Stephanie Grace, and she says, I recently switched from a slow, steady jog to a 1-1 run walk. My speed has improved. However, now I'm getting very serious shin cramps after about the first 10 minutes. Is it from literally putting on the brakes from run to walk? What can I do to stick to the run walk and not have these awful shin cramps?
Well, that is a consequence among those that put the brakes on, and I don't want you to put the brakes on. There's a drill that you will see illustrated on the Run Disney site. It's the acceleration glider drill. The main function of that drill, which is also written up in my books, the main function is to have you go from a walk break very gently into a slow jog, then gently into a little faster jog, and then to accelerate just to the pace that you're going to be doing in your workout, and then to glide seamlessly back in to a walk. And I say seamlessly because those who tell me they've had shin or other issues, it's almost always due to just, as you say, putting on the brakes, and you don't have to do that. That drill is a great warm-up for the Magic Mile, for speed work, for a race. But again, I can't emphasize enough how it must be a very gradual transition from a walk break to a slow jog, a faster jog, a gentle acceleration, and then a seamless glide down back into a walk. Never abrupt, change.
So I was going to, I said that I would imagine that would wreak havoc on your knees to do that too.
Yes, and I guess the follow-up on that is that the acceleration glider drill is the best way I have found to take you from a slow warm-up jog that you should be doing for about 5 minutes or so into the pace that you want to be doing in a workout or a race. And I recommend doing 4 of those acceleration gliders.
Jeff, we do get a lot of emails on shin splints. Are there other reasons why people get shin splints? Is it overuse? Is it a lot of other things that could bring on shin splints?
There are 2 types of shin splints predominantly. One is the anterior tibial shin splint, which is on the front of the leg, and that one is usually activated by letting the stride get a little out in front, or letting your foot get a little too far ahead of you. And this often occurs when you do a lot of fast downhill running, particularly if you're getting tired in a race and you have some downhills. A lot of people get a little sloppy and just let their foot stick too far out in front, and that definitely will activate the anterior tib sore or worse in terms of its pain. The other form of shin splints is posterior tibial, and that is most commonly due to overpronation. The site of the posterior tib is on the inside of the shin, and so that type of a shin splint can be helped by looking into a shoe choice that maybe has a little more stability if you're an overpronator. Or in some cases, there are some orthotics or some over-the-counter type of foot support systems that can keep your foot in a really stable position and keep it from rolling too much. But overall, Mike, you're right. The most common reason for shin splints, whether they be anterior tib or posterior tib, is doing too much too soon. And so try to ease into any increase in work and then try to avoid doing too much speed work if you're going to be doing that. Just gradually ease into it. And again, that acceleration glider exercise is a phenomenal way to gradually get your body used to a faster pace.
Very good. Okay, the next question is from Jackie Purcell, and she's wondering, what advice do you have for runners whose training hasn't gone as planned or just are not feeling motivated?
First of all, you have to realize that there are stresses in our life and there are stresses in running. And these stresses can build up and cause our subconscious brain to secrete anxiety and negative attitude hormones. You don't have to do away with the stress to do away with the hormones, but most of us allow the subconscious brain to conduct most of our activities throughout the day. If we have a cognitive strategy when we start to get unmotivated or down on ourselves, then we can move our thinking process into the frontal lobe, into the conscious brain, and take action step by step. And that's what a cognitive plan is all about. So you feel down on yourself, what you want to do is focus on something that you can do in your next run that you would look forward to. It could be something fun. It could be a scenic course. It could be just a type of workout that really invigorates you and it would cause you to look forward to it. And then you write it down. Writing and looking at the writing keeps you in the frontal lobe. And you set up a plan for the next workout. Don't just go out and run. Have something you're going to do for the warm-up and then maybe some acceleration gliders, and then you're going to pace yourself at certain pace for a quarter mile, a half mile, and so forth. The whole concept is if you have a plan of attack, you're going to be concentrating on using the conscious brain, and you're going to get away from the garbage that comes out of the subconscious brain.
So, Jeff, do you ever find yourself unmotivated?
Not anymore. I went through 20 years, my first 20 years of running, of having some ups and downs. During the first few years, there were more downs than ups. I just refused to give up when things didn't look good. That was just part of my personality. But a lot of people in my era just gave up when things weren't going their way. I was too stubborn, I guess. But during the last 25 years, I have learned how to stay in the conscious brain, the human brain, and have these cognitive plans in place. And as a result, I don't have many down days anymore.
That's really great. Okay, the next question is from Dana Birch, and she's wondering if there is a training program for the Expedition Everest 5K challenge, because she feels like it's more like a 10K because you have to run it sort of twice. And I don't know if you come for that race. Do you come to Orlando for that race?
I do not. Yeah. That is a race, and I'm not sure why, but it's not on my Run Disney schedule. They tell me where to go. I love going at whatever events, but that one is not. So quite honestly, I don't know that much about it, and I've not been given the assignment to set up training programs. But all I can say is what you need to do is look at the event and see what distance you're going to be covering in all the various segments, and then build your long runs up to a longer distance than what you believe you will be covering on that day. And then the other thing is to simulate some of the running pace that you anticipate for the Everest run. And if you can have one day a week that would be a little faster run, and then every 2 weeks you could do the longer, slower run to build up your endurance.
Great. Thank you. The next one is from Tracy Chernick, and she says, I will be doing my 10th half next week, getting coast to coast. She says, Jeff, if you remember, I am the redhead who is going to bring my niece to meet you at the expo. Thank you so much for helping to calm my nerves at Tinkerbell, my first solo race. Well, I'm planning on doing my first marathon in New York in November and going for a second coast to coast with food and wine. And she's going to be doing Dumbo again. She wants to know, how crazy am I to consider doing Dopey in January? I know with training I could do anything, but at the moment I'm starting to question my sanity. My initial goal was to do a half before I was 40, never thinking that a race was just the start of a whole new world for me. Is it just setting me up for bigger goals for myself in being scared, or is the doubt that I'm having normal?
Well, first of all, congratulations on 10 half marathons and the change of life. I have, after I wrote my mental training book, I started getting the feedback as people read that book who had gone through a life change using mostly half marathons, some marathons to do that. And what you're saying about how this has changed your life and how you love the empowerment that you get from it is a very common thing. And a lot of folks will start out telling themselves and their family members that they're just going to do one of these things, and then they're going to hang it up on the wall and that's going to be it. But it doesn't happen that way, because once you've gone through this and felt the empowerment, you want to keep that. I mean, you don't want to lose that. And having now run for 57 years about, and having run hundreds and hundreds of marathons and half marathons, I can tell you that that never goes away. It's wonderful stuff. So that said, coming to the Dopey is a different level of all of that. And the first thing that I'm going to say is, don't expect that running four events in 4 days is going to give you four times the empowerment. However, there are certain levels of achievement that we allow ourselves to get involved with. And the DOPI is doable. It teaches you to conserve your resources. And then once you've done that, if you've done it effectively, on that fourth day, there's a whole series of rewards mentally that you're going to receive from that. So first of all, don't count yourself out. And then if you prepare for it, as you'll see on the Run Disney site, you can experience a lot of great feelings and empowerments that you're going to get that weekend as well as throughout the whole training season.
That's great. I'm a testament to that, too. And I can't stop. Okay, a few more for you, Jeff. Brian Marks, our buddy, says, what are some suggestions for hydrating in long training runs? I usually go through my hydration belt in a regular half marathon, and they have water stations, but he's wondering if he's out on his own, what suggestions do you have?
Well, I've studied this quite extensively because there are some real issues with the absorption of fluids during running, whether it be training or during an event. The issues are that you don't get much blood flow to the gut, and the studies that I've seen on how much can be absorbed, how much fluid can be absorbed, water actually, during long runs and races is only 4 to 8 ounces an hour. So it's really not very much because there's not much blood flow there. The other major issue is hyponatremia, and that is you can drink too much fluid, not just water, just any fluid, and that can wash sodium out of your system, putting you at risk for a number of bad things, including death. And I'm against death. I want you to understand that.
Down with death.
But it's a serious thing to drink too much fluid. So after looking at all this, I've come up with a rule of thumb that has kept people in the safe range and yet has provided fluid that could be absorbed with a little extra to wash the waste products out as it goes through the kidneys. And that rule of thumb is 2 to 4 ounces of water every 2 miles. So as all rules of thumb, you could start out using that on your long runs and then adapt it to what works best for you. Some take a little bit less, some take more, but that's been a very good rule of thumb. And water is what I recommend rather than sports drinks, just based on feedback of thousands and thousands of people who have had nausea when they drink sports drinks, and they have not had that when they drink water. Water has actually been shown to be absorbed more quickly, and it causes fewer problems. So that's my recommendation.
So our next question is from, actually, two people ask it. Kimberly and Sherry want to know, trying to understand better what pace should be walking when doing a run walk. Let's say I run a 10-minute mile. What should I be aiming for? Is it how I feel, or is there a set pace? I know we've had people ask you this one before.
Well, Kimberly and Sherry, it's one of my most commonly asked questions, and I can't answer it. And the reason is that we've done a lot of surveys with our various Galloway training groups around the country as to how fast people walk when they get on a walk break. And the reality is that almost everybody walks at a different pace. And because you're walking at a different pace, your run pace is going to be at a different pace, too. There is no set standard. Your job one on a walk break is to recover from the run segment. So walk at a pace that will allow your running muscles and your joints and everything to recover and to take the stress away so that it will adapt. This normally means a relatively short stride. The long stride is what tends to cause problems, and actually long striding has been a cause of shin splints. But and I'm not saying baby steps on your walk, but just don't overstride. A lot of folks have actually speeded up their walk breaks by having quicker turnover during their walks, and they've shortened the stride, and they end up having fewer aches and pains that way. So practice that and find a pace that works. But I will tell you that the pace is going to change. The other item that we found through our surveys is that you take an individual and follow that person's walk pace. It's going to be different at different stages of the race. So don't try to set an exact same pace all the way through. You need to respond to the recovery process.
I think that's true. It's one of the things that I've noticed is that if I go to a 15 and 15, Jeff, my walk pace seems to be faster than if I'm doing a 30 and 15. And I don't know if that's my body not just slowing down a little bit between the runs, or if it's because if you have a longer, let's say if you do two ones, when you are into your walk pace, you tend to slow down as you get to the end of it. Whereas if you're doing 15s, 15s, by the time you're beginning to slow down, it's time to run again. So I find the shorter my intervals, the faster I walk.
It's an excellent observation, and it's one that is verified by my observations and my feedback, and that is that most of the benefit from a walk break occurs during the first 15 to 20 seconds of that walk break. And then after that, people tend to start slowing down their walk. So if you shorten the walk break and shorten the run break, you don't get as tired because you're not running as far, and you can keep the walk pace up at a faster pace.
I'm starting to see you're the Olympic question answerer too. You're doing a great job. This question's from Kelly Campbell, and she says, could you please explain the walk Saturday, run Sunday training for the Dumbo? Do you recommend walking the 10K before walk running the half marathon?
Well, Kelly, good to hear from you. Good to hear your question. This is also something that I do get a lot of questions on, and that is, if you're doing the Dumbo or any of the two-day events, such as a 10K on Saturday and a half marathon on Sunday, the training schedule is designed to gradually increase the distance that you are on your feet on Saturday, the day before your long runs. And by doing that, you're going to get your feet and your body used to staying on your feet on Saturday for approximately 6 miles. And then on Sunday, you're going to be going into your long runs with feet that are still a little bit tired from the Saturday. And it's a good thing simply because that's what you're going to have to experience on race weekend, and you want to be prepared for that. But the other thing is, your body has marvelous ability to adapt. And if you go through the training regularly, as identified by the Run Disney schedules that I prepared, you're going to find that you are prepared for it. The reason why I primarily suggest walking on Saturday is that you're going to get the same effect of being on your feet. But if you tried to do too much running on Saturday and then do your running and walking on Sunday, there's more aches and pains that can occur as a result of that. And I haven't found any downside to doing the walking on Saturday as opposed to run, walk, run. But finally, on race weekend, I also suggest that the Saturday 10K be done at a more leisurely pace and mostly walking, because that way you're going to save your resources for Sunday.
Terrific. Okay. So we're coming to the home stretch here. You're going to get your medal after this one, Jeff. The last question is from Kathy Ostrich, and she says, have my first ever half on the first weekend in May, and I plan to run the Wine and Dine half. How do I plan for the transition in May to June to the beginning of training in July? I guess taper down and then ramp back up period?
Well, I have a lot of my e-coach clients who have all types of variations there. And what you want to do is look ahead to your last race in the series of races you're doing and schedule your long ones that would build up to that last one. And then you look at it, look at the schedule, and see where the other races fall. When you have a half marathon that is 4 weeks apart, for example, you could have, you only need one long run halfway in between. If you have 6 weeks apart, then you would need to put a long run every other weekend, and that long run could actually drop down a little bit after the half marathon, first half marathon, and then it could rebuild back to what I recommend is 14 miles 2 weeks before the next half marathon. If you wanted, though, to improve your time, then a longer long run, very slow, 2 weeks before the last or second half marathon is very advisable. I've found that building up the long run to as much as 19 miles has produced an incredible amount of improvement, even more improvement than people usually experience from speed work. And if you add speed work to the longer long runs, a lot of people have improved as much as half an hour, actually a few more than that. So it really is all about what the schedule is. And if you have any issues or follow-up questions, you can ask those at jeffgalloway.com.
As always, Jeff, your information is just amazing, and we want to thank you for helping us with these questions. And once again, we'd love for you to come back on again sometime soon.
Well, I love what y'all are doing, Mike and Michelle, and I look forward to seeing you at the events, and I also look forward to working with you again. So that's a given. I'm going to be back.
Thank you, Jeff.
And again,
great to talk.
And again, for those who want to learn more about Jeff's training programs and about all the wonderful books and all the knowledge that he is sharing with everyone, you can go to www.jeffgalloway.com. And if you want to learn more about the inaugural Jeff Galloway 13.1, we encourage you to go to www.jeffgalloway131.com and learn all about that race that's occurring on Sunday, December 14th, 2014 in Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm going to sneak in one more question. Jeff, how many? What's the limit of participants in that race?
Good question.
Well, we have actually not looked at that yet. We're going to meet with our police security people and make that decision fairly soon.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And you can actually register for that race already. Registration is already open. So if you're thinking about going to Atlanta in December, then why not do a race with Jeff Galloway? So on behalf of Jeff Galloway and Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And when it comes to vacations, you don't want to fool around. You work hard all year, so you might as well get the most out of your vacation. And there's nobody better than the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel to help you do so, be it a Disney vacation or any other vacation. Nobody does it better than the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, so give them a try. Go visit them at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or go over to the MickeyMilesPodcast.com website and click on their banner.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.